All right, I want to welcome everybody to our call tonight. This is Jill and David Stoll. Say hi, Jill.
Hi.
We're the owners of Stoll Learning Center in Diamond Bar, California. Been in business for 25 years now, helped somewhere around 4,000 students fix their learning problems, and that's exactly what it is that we do. Our business is not designed to help people limp better. It's not designed to help people compensate. It's really designed to help people fix learning problems so that they can compete on an even playing field, so that the need for compensations goes away. These phone calls, we're going to spend about 45 minutes to an hour on Monday nights sharing ideas about fixing learning problems. Now, just so that you know, this is not a diagnostic session. This is, you know, we don't have the kind of time to get deeply into exactly which issues a particular student might have. But it is kind of a glimpse or an awareness of what's possible for students today. Sometimes people ask, why is it we do these phone calls? Well, first of all, there are 14.9 million school kids with learning skills that really could be improved, which would make their learning and their whole school experience and their life much easier. Secondly, we don't have the capacity to serve 14.9 million students. But at the same time, each week we get calls from across the U.S. and often from foreign countries asking us this question: is there anybody in your area, in our area, that's like you? And the answer most of the time is no, and that's because there aren't a lot of people who do what we do, and we know most of them, and we refer to them if there is somebody in the area. Here's what we do hope. In these phone calls, we really want to give parents hope. We want to give them knowledge, and we want to help send them in the right direction and also to ask the right questions. No one call will tell you all that we do, but over the course of a few weeks, if you keep calling in, you'll get a bigger and bigger and more complete picture about fixing learning skills. Did I leave anything out there, Jill?
I don't think so.
All right. Let's go on to tonight's topic. Tonight we're really talking about the faces of learning problems. What do learning problems look like? And one of the things that we know about learning problems is some of them are really obvious. Can you give me a couple of examples of kids, Jill, that, you know, it's very obvious there's a learning problem?
Well, we have just started working with a third grade girl who really, truly, absolutely cannot read. Now, she's very, very bright, so it's obvious that there's a learning problem because she can't read.
Sure. And so some of these things really stand, you know, it's like they jump up and wave their arms at you and say, learning problem. Other times, though, they mask as different things. I think we've got, don't we have three students you want to talk about that where it's not really nearly as obvious what's going on?
Right, because a lot of times what happens is parents come to us and they say, here are the things I see happening with my child, and I don't know. I feel like there's a problem learning, but I don't know. Maybe it could be something else. So let me give you some examples, because learning problems can be confusing. Kids with challenges can be confusing to parents and teachers and even themselves sometimes. Here's an example. This is a wonderful little boy. He's 10 years old in the fourth grade, but he kind of gets through his day every day at school, just, you know, chatting with friends, making jokes in class, and doesn't get very much work done at all. He is fun and smart, but, you know, his teacher is pretty irritated with him, honestly, because he keeps disrupting the class because he's talking and joking all the time. And it's really hard to understand why a smart boy is not getting very much done.
You're talking about Mike, aren't you?
I am. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, it looks like he has an attention deficit or he's just not motivated. He just wants to play. And so that that's a question that a parent or teacher might have. What is going on here? Is there really a problem, or is this just a kid who, you know, doesn't really want to do what he's told? He just wants to play around.
And we get calls like that all the time, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We do.
Who's next?
Josh. This is a mom that I spoke to recently. Her son is at a private school. He's in ninth grade, and he's actually really good at sports and really good at all sports. So he plans on being on every sports team that the school has. The problem is that his grades are really poor, and his mom said by this next report card, she figures the coach is going to say that he can't play anymore on any of the teams this year because his grades aren't good enough. And she looks at that and says, okay, I don't get this. He can read, he can write, he can spell, he can do math.
Sounds lazy to me.
Well, you know, she said he's really motivated to play sports, and he knows he can't play without good grades, so why isn't he working harder? Why isn't he getting good grades?
That would be really frustrating as a parent.
Yeah, it is. And Josh has started putting on this attitude of not caring. But, you know, his mom, who knows him well, said, you know, he acts like he doesn't care, but I honestly think that he's embarrassed and humiliated.
But wow.
We don't know what to do.
So we've got Mike who kind of jokes his way through the day, and Josh who wants to play sports. Who else is on our list tonight?
Amanda, who is in seventh grade, and Amanda actually has two issues that are making her pretty miserable in middle school. One is math, because it takes hours and hours for her to do her homework, and she just can't seem to get it. So as long as her dad is sitting there with her, which is really frustrating to her because he explains and explains and explains, but as long as he's there, she can manage to get homework done in math, but she's completely failing on the test because she doesn't really get it. And the other thing going on with her is that she can't seem to keep friends. So she'll make a friend, kind of, but then they'll miscommunicate, or they'll have some kind of an argument, or the friend will get frustrated with her, and she doesn't really know why. But pretty soon, that friend isn't hanging out with her anymore. So
that's heartbreaking.
It is. It is. Friends are incredibly important.
I think what you're saying through these three students, Mike, Josh, and Amanda, is that there are actually learning problems going on that are making these conditions happen. Is that right?
There really are.
And
yet, they don't necessarily... It's not as obvious as if they couldn't read at all, or they couldn't write, you know, or they wrote all their letters backwards or something like that.
Now, we do want to make sure we're clear here, because all the students that we deal with have what we would call average or above average intelligence, right?
Right.
And when we say average, you know, when men talk about women sometimes, and they say, how does she look? And a guy would say average, and which means she's not very good looking. But when we're talking about IQ, average is really good, isn't it?
Average is what it should be.
Okay, well, we're not talking about low IQ, we're not talking about mental retardation, we're not talking about those kinds of issues. We're talking about kids who really are bright.
Right, we're talking about regular kids.
So what's really going on with Mike, the guy who makes jokes and irritates his teachers, but everybody loves him?
Mike is dyslexic.
You mean he reverses letters?
Dyslexic means that you have difficulty with reading, and there are usually two kind of major pieces to that. One is that there is confusion with symbols. with letters. So he doesn't necessarily reverse all of his letters, but he does get confused when he looks at letters and words. The other thing is that he has difficulty processing or thinking about the sounds inside of words. So when he goes to sound out words, he might add sounds in or leave them out or mix them up, and he doesn't realize it. He doesn't have a way to check that to see if he's right. So Mike can read some. He's smart. He's memorized some words, and he can figure things out, but he really doesn't read very well at all. So it's very, very difficult for him to do fourth grade level work. It's exhausting. And
So it's just really hard for him.
It's really hard. It is really, truly, truly hard for him. But he's just so gregarious that, you know, he can feel good about himself by joking and making other people laugh. And it also relieves the pressure of having to do the work. Unfortunately, in a way, he can read enough that he can sometimes do some of the work. So when his teacher in particular looks at it, she says, well, he can, you know, I know he can do this. He's choosing not to. But the reality is that he really can't read very well at all, and it is a huge, huge struggle for him.
Would it be accurate to say that the smarter a kid is, the less obvious the learning problem is? Because they can, like, memorize better and stuff like that?
Well, sometimes. Just the fact that they are very bright, it may mean that they are more easily able to find ways to cover it up. But it doesn't mean that it's not painful or that it's not, that it's
really
not a
difficult.
Really serious issue.
Okay. So Mike, you say, is dyslexic. Josh, the guy who's so good in sports, what's going on with him?
Well, Josh is kind of interesting because he really does have some pretty decent reading and writing and math skills. But what he's lacking is the ability to plan and organize and strategize. It's kind of like he's got these isolated skills, but he can't seem to get it all together in order to organize his homework and get it done, in order to study for tests. And so he gets overloaded, and then all kinds of things fall through the cracks.
Huh. Now, what would we call that?
Well, I would call that most of the skills he's dealing with would fall into what we would call executive function. Kind of that part of the brain that helps us to guide our behavior and reason through things and plan. And it really truly is an issue for him. This is a boy who actually is very motivated. He's very worried about not being able to play sports. In fact, he's kind of banking on being able to go to college on a sports scholarship, but he can't get his grades together. So, you know, this is not a lazy kid. This is a kid who really wants it, and he just can't seem to manage it all.
Wow. So what's happening with Amanda?
Well, Amanda, her key issue is actually an auditory processing problem.
She can't hear well enough?
No, she can hear, but she has difficulty with thinking about the information that she hears. So it's actually not a hearing problem, but a listening problem. What's happening is when she tries to listen, she's missing some of the information. So she gets some of it, but she doesn't get it all.
Now, is that because she's not paying attention?
It's really because her brain is not paying attention to all of the information coming in when she's listening. So it's not an attention deficit. It's really a listening problem or an auditory processing problem. It's kind of like having a bad cell phone connection. It's not that you're not paying attention. It's just that the information coming in isn't complete and it isn't good. And so you're having to work so hard to get the information, and it's tiring. And what's happening for Amanda is, in math class, she's missing pieces of the information, so she's confused most of the time, because math just builds on everything you've already learned. She does a little bit better in English because she can read, and she's patient enough to read and reread and reread to make sure she gets it all. But with friends and in conversation, again, she's missing some of the information, so she says the wrong thing, or she laughs at the wrong time, or she gets defensive because she thinks someone said something that they didn't. And so it's just really disrupting her communication with peers. And so, you know, they don't want to hang out with her.
Well, Jill, would you say Mike, Josh, and Amanda are unique?
I would say that they're actually very typical. There are, as you said earlier, there are about 14 million, actually closer to 15 million school-age students in our country that are dealing with some degree of difficulty with learning. And that could be, you know, a severe learning disability that's very obvious, but it could also be, you know, more a gray area kind of an issue like Josh is dealing with, that, you know, looks like he's not trying, but in fact he really is.
I think that you divide these groups of skills up into four categories. Is that right?
We do. You know, when you think about learning, most people really think about the kinds of things you learn in school, like reading, writing, spelling, math, foreign language, geography, all those things.
Right, and isn't that where, you know, parents usually notice when there's a problem?
Right, absolutely. When they're struggling in a subject area, then they're going to get poor grades, and then that's a red flag. There's something wrong. So that area, actually, though, is the highest level of learning.
So would you say that's the first category, academic skills?
Well, I would say the fourth category is academic skills. And so
it's one of the four anyway.
Right. So when we look at learning, we recognize that if there's a problem with academic skills, chances are that the issue really is happening in how the person processes information. Because learning is really all about processing information, processing incoming information. For example, if you take a two-year-old who picks up a cracker and then closes his hand too tight and the cracker breaks, well, now he's learning something because he's processing what happened when he squeezed his hand too tight. If you have a 12th grader doing calculus, they're processing information. So learning is all about information processing, and that really has, there are a lot of skills that support that.
Okay. So academic is the highest.
Academics is the highest, and we look at learning skills on a continuum. And we've broken that continuum into four different groups, which are basically sequential and move along in a hierarchy. So in order to learn academics, all those skills underneath need to be in place.
Well, what are the other sets of skills?
Well, the first level of skills is what we call core learning skills or developmental learning skills. And that actually begins before a baby is born, because learning is stimulated by movement, and before a baby is born, they have reflexes which trigger movement, and that's the beginning of learning. But once the baby is born, higher levels in the brain start to take over so that movements become more intentional, and so those reflexes should go away. In some people, the reflexes don't become integrated or inactive, and so maybe you've still got these low-level reflexes triggering that are causing interference to learning.
Now, you talk about these things happening before a baby is born. Is that because moms and dads have done something they shouldn't?
No, actually, reflexes are exactly the way a baby develops. Because
okay.
At first, the brain isn't sophisticated enough to make decisions. And so reflexes actually help a baby be born and help it survive in its first year.
Okay.
But then, kind of through trial and error, they learn, oh, look what happens if I crush this, close my hand tight on this cracker, or if I swing my arm this way. And they start to, then the brain starts to figure some things out. And that's a higher level of thinking than a reflex. And then pretty soon we do things on purpose, which is a higher level. And so as we grow and learn, higher and higher levels in the brain become organized and take over our movements and our thinking.
Well, are you saying that there are some situations where these lowest level skills have not been acquired or the reflexes haven't dropped, like in a senior in high school? Is that possible?
You know, it's possible even in adults. And what happens is, you know, as humans, we learn how to compensate, but whenever you're compensating for something, it means that you're not doing it in the easiest way possible. And so let me give you an example. We worked with a boy who was in 11th grade. He was 16, and he struggled in school. He struggled socially. And one of the things that stands out to me about him was he would always, when he was walking and when he was sitting, he was always slumping down. And when you'd work with him, he would literally be laying on the desk. And so you'd say to him, okay, Chris, sit up tall. And he'd sit up, but within seconds, he was back down on the desk. And the result of that was that it really interfered with his learning, and it came across, he came across with a real attitude of, I don't care what you say, I'm not interested. And that's kind of how he presented all of the time. Well, what we realized with Chris was that he really couldn't sit up tall or walk with good posture because he had, when we did some testing, we found he had all these primitive reflexes that should have gone away by the time he was 1 year old. But they were still firing and still getting in the way of him being in control of exactly what he wanted to do. When we worked with him on these core learning skills and helped him move beyond the reflexes to higher control of body and attention, he began to sit straighter, walk straighter, act more mature, and pay attention better, and then gradually was able to relate to people better and learn better and kind of pull it together.
So you can teach these?
You can, and it's kind of amazing. I mean, you wouldn't, by looking at someone, automatically say, oh, they, you know, they're totally out of control of their body. But if you explore, you realize, gosh, there's all this interference, and they're sort of fighting their body and their attention all the time.
Huh.
And it's a way of learning.
If those core learning skills are in place, is that all they need?
Well, remember we said that's really the first level.
Okay, so what's the next level up?
The next level is what we call processing skills. And I like to think of those as mental tools. Those are things like memory, attention, visual processing, or how we think about and remember information that we see, auditory processing, how we think about sounds and words, how we think about things that we hear. So those
are you telling me that you can teach memory?
Absolutely.
Wow.
All of these things can be trained. The brain is amazing. And with, you know, I mean, it takes some specialized and intensive kinds of instruction, but absolutely, the brain can learn more efficient ways of processing information so that, you know, now you have a better set of mental tools to take to school with you to learn with.
Hmm. So we've got the core learning skills, and we've got, what did you call them, processing skills? All right, and what's the third level?
And then we have executive function. And executive function is, if you think of the word executive, well, it's kind of like the CEO part of your brain. It's the part that makes decisions. It guides our behavior and our attention and deals with things like organizing and strategizing and evaluating. So it's higher level thinking. You know, a lot of times, well, I know in fifth grade, kids have to do a state report, and where they have to research and write all about a state in the United States. And parents are always saying, well, yeah, I just finished my state report, because parents are always having to do it. Well, the bottom line is that 10- and 11-year-olds don't really have the executive function skills that they need to plan and organize and implement a long-term project. And so the parent, you know, really has to be heavily involved. So certainly executive function develops as we grow, and in fact doesn't even completely develop until mid-20s. But there are students like Josh who have a particular weakness in that area for his age. And again, those skills can be trained, and for kids that where it's weak, chances are they're not going to develop completely if they don't get some outside training.
So we've got core learning, processing skills, executive function. When all those are working, then the academic skills are ready to be taught.
Right. And if you look at your students in school that are doing well and doing it easily, you'll find that they have a really solid set of underlying skills.
Okay. Now, I want to go back and just reiterate something, because we are still talking about kids that have average or above average intelligence, right?
Yes.
We're not talking about low IQs.
No.
We're not talking about other issues that might interfere. We're talking about kids, you know, that have the intellectual capacity to do this work.
Right. And sometimes, you know, sometimes we get kids who are honor roll students, maybe even straight A students, who actually have some interference to their learning that's causing them to have to work too hard. In fact, I can give you an example. Our college age daughter has always been a straight A student, but whenever she looks at a textbook, she's saying, gosh, whenever I look at a textbook, I'm so tired. I fall asleep almost immediately, and it's just so much work to read. And guess what? The way her visual processing is working is causing her to have to work too hard. So she is now doing some vision training to help support, you know, some already good skills that she has, but just to make it easier. So, you know, we definitely are talking about kids with average or above average ability, and sometimes they can even look like great students. But if they're working way too hard, then there's probably something underneath that's not working efficiently enough for them.
Now, with these kinds of issues and the three kids that we talked about, Mike and Josh and Amanda, could they just, you know, get this solved by willpower? Could they just try harder and get it?
No. Well, you know, it's so frustrating to me when I hear people say, and Mike's teacher actually has said this numerous times. He just doesn't care. He doesn't pay attention. He doesn't even try. And when I watch him work, I feel like he's just sweating blood. You know, all the willpower in the world is not going to change the fact that he's dyslexic. And just slowing it down isn't going to change it. Or doing it more and more, you know, doing more of the same. You know, if a child has trouble with reading, okay, let's give them more reading. Maybe that will make it better. Well, it won't. It will only frustrate them. Because it was already hard the first time. Why do it a whole bunch more times? The way that we're going to solve these issues is to figure out where on the continuum are things breaking down.
Do they always break down in just one place?
It could be one place or it could be a number of places. So it's really important to take a really close look and find out exactly what is getting in the way and then begin addressing those issues in order. So if there are issues in, you know, in that low core learning area, well, we've got to start there. But sometimes, as in Josh's case, you know, the issue, he was really okay there, but we had to start working with some of the processing and executive function skills, working a little bit higher up on the continuum.
Well, schools and tutors and of course the big time franchise tutoring companies, do they work on these things?
Generally, schools and tutoring companies and tutors work on academic skills.
They're just at the highest level skills.
Right. They're working on curriculum and working on academics. So a lot of times if a child has problems with reading, then they get special help with reading in school, or the parent gets them a reading tutor. Unfortunately, that does not usually solve the problem because the issues that are causing it are lower down on the continuum.
Well, why don't schools and tutors work on something other than academic skills?
In general, I believe that schools, you know, look at their job as teaching curriculum. I mean, that is the primary job.
To what they get measured on, isn't it? What they get evaluated on.
Right. And honestly, what I hear over and over is that through testing at school, it's often recognized that a student has an auditory processing problem or has memory problems, but most people don't understand that you really can change those things. So they believe that the way to deal with it is to give them compensations and to give them accommodations to help them make it through. But most people don't really understand that those issues can actually be developed and changed.
Is it fair to say that schools are not trained to fix all these skills?
In general, yes. I mean, you certainly have isolated teachers here and there that have kind of on their own gone out and learned some of these kinds of things. But in general, yeah, I would say that...
Is it fair that they're not budgeted to fix these things?
Yes, absolutely.
And what about staffing? Are they staffed to do the kind of work that fixes these skills?
Not typically because, well, no, they're not. Because this kind of work really requires one-on-one intensive instruction. If you're really going to make these changes, you've got to target it specifically and work one-on-one with the individual.
So if we were to look at the difference between what we do at the Learning Center and what's done at a school, we don't really teach academics, do we? We just solve learning problems permanently by fixing all those little skills that support learning. Is that right?
That is definitely our approach. We also do a very good job of remediating reading, math, spelling, writing, developing study skills. But we know that we have to put the supporting skills in place first.
So if we have any message for parents tonight, it would seem to me what we would really want them to understand is, number one, learning problems are not always obvious.
Right.
That a lot of times they look like lazy or not trying or not caring. Not always, but sometimes. The second thing is that learning problems are a bit complicated. It sounds like there are quite a few areas and skills that can be not quite in place, and any of them can affect the academic skills and the performance.
That's true. And one of the other things that I think is valuable for parents and teachers to understand is that if there are challenges in the core learning skills or in the processing skills, that is going to stress the person's attention. So if they're struggling to remember things or struggling to process what they're hearing, it could look like they have an attention deficit. So a lot of things that look like an attention problem are really the result of some other kind of problem that's stressing their attention. And I think that's important for people to know because it's so common now for people to say, oh, well, he has an attention problem, he needs medication, which is exactly the case with Mike. You know, the teacher was pretty frustrated with the mom for not putting him on medication because it looked like he had an attention problem. But in reality, the attention problem was just a symptom
of something else going on.
Something else, right.
It seems to me there's one other thing we'd really want parents to know, and that is that with specialized programs, that these things can actually be changed to the point where compensation and you know, fewer words and more time on tests isn't even necessary anymore.
Right.
Good. All right. It sounds like we've covered a lot today.
We have.
Let's talk about our next call. What are we going to cover?
Well, we are going to cover some myths about learning problems. There are some very strong common beliefs about learning problems that are actually hurting our children. And so we're going to talk about what those are. We also would like to give parents an opportunity if they, you know, have some things, if their child is having some challenges and they'd like to email us some questions, then we certainly, you know, depending on how many questions, we might not be able to get to all of them, but we would like to be able to also try to address some parent questions.
So we'll ask people to mail to questions@fixlearningskills.com.
Right.
So, you know, I know we can't cover a lot in these phone calls and we can't go into a tremendous amount of depth, but we'd love to answer some questions. And again, that's questions@fixlearningskills.com. Well, what a great time tonight. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And we will talk again next Monday, 5:15 Pacific, 8:15 Eastern. Have a great night, everybody.
Sounds great. Good night.